This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, a busy Friday today. I'm Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, of course, hanging out at the D, Fremont Street, downtown Las Vegas. I'm Patrick Maher. Excited about the World Series coming up. Game one, $1.70. That's the price on the Rangers in the series. Plus 145 is the price coming back on the Snakes. Eric Kratz does a great job. Former Major League Baseball catcher, Foul Territory TV host, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's tremendous. Eric Kratz 31 on Twitter, and we say hi to Eric. So they're big favorites. You heard it, $1.70 to win 100 there on the Rangers. Should they be favored by that much in the series?
Not that much. I feel like it's kind of like the name of your show, Sharp Money. Is it because it's going to cut you, or is it because it's smart money? So it's one of those things. I mean, 170 feels like the people who made that didn't watch what the Diamondbacks have done in this series. They're just like looking at a baseball card going, well, I guess it's just going to be another, you know, Rangers are going to win. The favorite is going to win. The Rangers are favored, but I was more interested in buying it at like 135, 140.
First of all, we love that comment because Eric, Patrick, and I had that exact price, 135 to 140. That's exactly what we thought. Question for you. Arizona wins the World Series if?
They continue on the path that they have continued on the whole time. And I don't just mean winning. I mean having a game plan that is fluid in the sense of pitching. Like you saw what the Phillies did to them. Yes, the Phillies were hot at the beginning. The Phillies went cold. But the Phillies went cold because the game plan changed. Brent Strom changed the game plan, and the Diamondbacks executed it to perfection. The Diamondbacks don't have dudes with big names coming out of the bullpen, although people should know who Kevin Ginkle is. People should know who Paul Sewald is, but they don't, and that's okay. But this is a team, a pitching staff that has the ability to make pitches. And if you come up with a game plan in the postseason, you're going to be able to, if you have guys that can execute it, you're going to go a long way. And you saw the Phillies left a lot of guys on base. That wasn't because the Phillies were just unlucky or because like, oh, you know, they got guys on and they just weren't good enough to get them in. It was because the game plan was, we're not going to let this person beat us when this person's on the mound. We're not going to let this person beat us when this person's on the mound. So That is where Arizona's strength comes in, and there is not a lot of there's some free money in there when you look at what they can and can't do as a team.
Eric Kratz joining us, Foul Territory TV. You can download wherever you get your podcast. Watch on YouTube. I encourage you, of course, 11 seasons in the majors. So I know you heard what was going on with Mad Dog, and he said he's going to retire if the Diamondbacks win two in a row there in Philly. Did you hear, Eric, that he got a text from somebody in inning six of game seven there in Philly? It was Bruce Bochy. He said, are you nervous yet? And I tell you that just because, like, that's the Bochy vibe, right? He's a good dude. He's not sitting around breaking down analytics. He's waiting for whether it's the Phillies or the Diamondbacks, and he's back in another World Series. He's a Hall of Famer.
He is a Hall of Famer, and that's a Hall of Fame text that he sent. And it's an absolute flex by a dude that is, he's exactly what you said, except about the analytic part. He knows the numbers. I was fortunate to play for him for about 6 weeks with the Giants. He knows the numbers. He just doesn't live and die on them. He knows that people with heartbeats are executing these pitches and swinging the bats and having issues with their girlfriends or having issues with too many people asking for World Series tickets. And he's empathetic to that, but he's also empathetic to the fact that he wants to win. Like, he wants to win. And I think Torrey Lovello has the same thing. The difference is, Bochy's done it. He's got three World Series rings, and it's not by chance that he's in the spot that he's in right now.
When you look at this team personality-wise, which team do you think has taken on their manager's personality more than anyone else or out of the two teams, rather?
Oh, man. I mean, that's a great question because I think both teams really have. But if you take on Bochy's personality, it would be a bunch of sarcastic, really low, slow moving people like that. So that's not really, they really haven't taken on his personality, but they've taken on his winning approach and his approach to never just, you know, resting on your laurels, resting on the fact that they are a team that bangs. So I think the Rangers have done that in the sense of like really trusting who they are, even through the ups and downs. But Torrey Lovello, like what he's done with this team, they have built a, they've built a team in the speed. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they're just speed. Corbin Carroll had 25 homers. I think Christian Walker had 33 or 34 homers. Like they have dudes with homers. Like they can hit the ball out of the ballpark, but they're a team that was built on that speed. And Torrey Lovello allows them to do that. They said, hey, you know what? This is the kind of roster we're going to construct. And he allows them to do that. He doesn't get in their way. After game five, he didn't get in their way. I think before that, he was kind of hamstringing them a little bit. Credit to the Phillies. They had a great game plan. But then the Diamondbacks came back, and they played their game. So I think both teams really, really like run on the way their managers' personalities kind of run these teams.
Obviously, the networks, Eric Kratz doing a great job joining us. The networks wanted Philly in the World Series. However, we're going to get Arizona and, of course, the Texas Rangers. Give us an idea of the home fields, right? Give us an idea of the parks there. You always hear Chase Field get crushed for maybe not being as lit or whatever as Philly. But give us an idea there with the Rangers and the Diamondbacks' home field advantage.
Do you mean lit like the kids say lit now or lit like the lights are dim?
I can't believe a 45-year-old man just said that, but let's pretend it didn't happen.
Well, I'm a high school baseball coach, so I need to know all these lingo and lit and cap and bet and all that stuff. Anyway, no, I think the home field advantage is just not as talked about as it is in Philly. Like I think the whole Philly thing is real. Listen, I grew up outside of Philadelphia. I now moved back and live outside of Philadelphia. I played for the Phillies. I was in the postseason with the Phillies, and I was in the postseason with a lot of other teams. A lot of teams have a competitive advantage at home. I think somewhat, and some people are going to probably blast me for saying this, home field advantage in the World Series is a little bit different. Even when I saw last year, I went to a World Series game for the Phillies, and I went to a NLCS game with the Phillies against the Padres. And I feel like in 2014 in the World Series in Kansas City, the fan base that comes out to World Series games is a little bit more tepid than, say, the first two rounds. The first two rounds, people are scrounging together money to come to these games, and they are rabid fans. The World Series fans, look, it costs twice as much, if not three times, to go to a World Series game. There's just a little bit more tepid fan base that comes to those World Series games. I'm not taking anything away from people who go to World Series games. I'm just saying that it's a little less of a home field advantage, except for when you feel comfortable as a team. So it's less about the fans and more in the World Series and more about, you know, who really comes and can play at home. And I think both of these teams play really well at home, which is how you would think it would go down, Astros, but that's normally how it goes.
Love that breakdown there. When you look at what Adolis Garcia was able to do, can he even come close to duplicating it? I mean, that was an otherworldly performance we saw, particularly in the last four games.
Oh my goodness. Like, I guess if that's what it takes, like you hit somebody, just make sure you don't hit him. I guess it really, they struck him out the next four at bats and then he looked lost. And then it became just the Adolis show. I mean, he is definitely talented, and in no way am I going to take anything away from what he can do. I think the Astros totally punted on being able to execute pitches that were not in his zones. He has pitches in zones that he can't handle. And it's the reason that his batting average is what it is. You know, there's strikeout in there. And they just started just pounding his hot zones. it was like, you know, everyone, you know, the video everyone remembers is the opposite field home run that he hit, and then the ball off the wall that he almost didn't get to first base off, you know, to left field. But those are just in his happy zones. Like, it's just absolute dinger fest. Like, he should have done what he did to those pitches. So I think he's able to be pitched to, and that's something where if Arizona can execute, he's going to be an out all series.
Okay, Eric, just 1 minute left. Let's get a prediction for game one. Texas Eovaldi laying $1.62, coming back Gallen plus 142.
I don't like $1.62. I don't know that I'm like guaranteeing that the Rangers are going to get minus 1.5 on the run line. So what I love in this game, I love the Rangers money line and buying up 10.5, under 10.5. I don't even know if they're going to get to 8.5 in this game, but I'll buy my runs up and I'll go under 10.5. And that's a plus money. And I love plus money. So that's because DJ Rayburn is behind the dish. DJ Rayburn is behind the dish, and he's a 75th in strike calls, home plate umpiring, like, audits. So it's going to be a tough night to score runs.
I told you he was a better. We could tell the last time. Eric Kratz, foul territory. That was awesome. At Eric Kratz 31 on Twitter. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
No doubt, boys.
Thank you.
That was hilarious.
That's great.
All right, we're back, Char Buddy.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
College basketball about to tip off, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide. It's a great guide this year. Matt Eumann's top 25 rankings, who could be this year's Florida Atlantic, all 32 conferences previewed, Wooden Award candidates, of course, futures and season-long prop bets to make. It's all there within the guide. Now, again, you can subscribe for as low as $19, or you can sign up with the Sports Equinox, and the guide is involved and included, all of our guides, I should say, included. $120, VSiN Pro access to everything we do until May 1st. That's all college basketball season long, March Madness and beyond for only $120. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we got you back here, Sharp Money. Busy show, Friday, busy time of the year, boys. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. So we've got plenty to do, and I'll leave it to you here, Dustin, because, of course, we've got Samich coming up in the final hour on a Friday. Our trademark, we're going to run the board, the NFL board. So we'll give a lean on every NFL game coming up this week. We've got plenty as far as the NBA we could touch on. Just wanted to quickly say, boys, I don't know if you got into the Thursday night games yesterday. I will say, how about Dame Dalla, your boy, delivering? It's going to be very interesting because watching that game last night, and of course, you had a Bucks 118-117 winner, and Dame went off. Now, here's what's interesting. I don't know if you two have a take. 39 points. He was just 4 of 12 from 3, 19 of 20 from the floor, so he shot a ton. 8 boards for Dame and 4 assists. Giannis, 23, 13 boards, and he had 3 assists. What's interesting, and we've talked about just the temperament of Giannis and what a great dude he is, Amal. Dame's going to be the go-to guy late. And it's kind of fascinating because Milwaukee is Giannis's city. But you can tell just the vibe I got last night. I think in the postseason, big shot to make, I think it's going to be Dame's ball. And he's always kind of been known as that guy. By the way, how about your boy? He hit four three-pointers from Brooke Lopez. I'm sure Dustin hit all his props last night, too, because he's a prop king. But do you get the sense that it's going to be Dame's ball late in a big spot.
Hey, a couple things. Let's start with your play on Brooke Lopez. What a great play. I told Dustin this morning, I said, plus 150 cash so easily. Brooke Lopez has a nice game shooting the ball from the perimeter, did a great job. Patrick, I would take it one step further. I don't even think. I am telling you right now in game one, we already know it's going to be Dame's team. 17 for 17 yep. from the free throw line last night. Here's the other thing and why Dame's got to have the basketball. You know, people don't realize this statistically unless you look at the numbers. This guy is right there with Steph Curry in terms of career free throw percentage. He is an absolute just machine at the free throw line. Clutch shots. We saw hit a four-point play yesterday. He's incredible. But I'm with you. I think, though, if there's ever one superstar, maybe outside of the Joker, that would be willing to acquiesce to a teammate to be able to win games, I think it's Giannis. We saw Chris Middleton take some shots down the stretch for Milwaukee in the past when the game was on the line. I think Giannis is about winning, and I don't think it'll be a problem there. But this team, if they can get these types of contributions like they got last night out of Brooke Lopez, I think they're going to be tough to beat. I like Damian Lillard played, for people that don't know, he's from Oakland, played at Weber State in Ogden, Utah, and then played in Portland and now in Milwaukee. He's not a guy that needs to be in New York, doesn't need to be in these bigger markets. He is going to be great. I think the Milwaukee team's got an opportunity to be able to potentially win 60 games during the regular season. I'm looking forward to seeing how this thing gels together over the course of 82.
I totally agree. I think it could be something special. Maxey went off for the 76ers. The future Nick, your boy Joel Embiid, 24-7-6. So the hard look, it's almost like insidious what Harden's doing to this organization. And it's just kind of this ominous cloud that's going to hang over the 76ers. They've got to get a decision made there. It's not even about the games right now for the 76ers. It's like, will this clear up?
Yeah, but here's the thing is you mentioned Embiid as a trade option for the Knicks. I don't think Embiid's going. I see a lot of people throwing the rumors around. I'm curious if there is a real offer the Knicks can make for James Harden and if all of this going on is driving the price down. Can you get 50 cents on the dollar now for James Harden to come to a team like the Knicks? And is it worth it to mess up your core? I am strongly considering wanting James Harden on my team, and I need you guys to tell me I'm crazy.
What? You're crazy. Who? I wouldn't play him for free. Like just even as a basketball player, what do you want from James Harden at this point?
I'm desperate. No, for someone who can do what he's capable of doing.
No, Patrick summarized it perfectly. What do you want him for at this point in time? I mean, you said 50 cents on the dollar. I don't care if you're getting, as Patrick said, for free. You don't want this guy. You know, it was funny you said that.
You can get good polo shirts at TJ Maxx, man.
I don't disagree, but at least they're wearable.
No, the stitching's a little off. The logo's not quite right. That's the I'm getting James Harden with the beard slightly
crooked. Here's the difference. If I come in with that crooked polo shirt from TJ Maxx, it doesn't affect what you and Patrick are wearing. James Harden's going to impact what everybody else is wearing.
Exactly.
That's a great point.
That's the great point.
All right, you talked me out of it. I'm done.
You know what's funny? I was looking at the Knicks salary cap last night. Their problem is they're paying Evan Fournier $19 million, R.J. Barrett $23 million, when Julius Randle, and this is crazy to say in today's in sports, Julius Randle at $29 million is not bad.
No.
Yeah. Who's the kid? Brunson, $25 million, fine, no problem. But when you're paying Fournier and Barrett $42 million, that's your problem.
I'm good with the Barrett contract. It's Fournier. By the way, last night, Patrick, here's how NBA betting goes in general. Two props. Josh Okogie over 14.5 points, rebounds, and assists. He goes way over that number. The other prop, Torian Prince over 14.5 points, rebounds, and assists. He started for the Lakers. The Lakers scored 100 points and won. Let me look at this stat line from Torian Prince last night. 0 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists in 18 minutes.
It's almost hard to do.
It's really impressive to be a starter on the floor with all the attention on Anthony Davis and LeBron James to go 0-0-0.
Isn't Torian Prince the one when Baylor lost to Yale had the comment, they go, how did Yale get more rebounds? I want to say it was him. I could be wrong.
Him?
It was a good. It was him, Quincy AC. They had another guy that was good. There was a good Baylor.
Somebody should have asked him that last night. How did you not get any rebounds?
He got zero. I know the big guy well enough, and I know he wants to create content, but posing the question to us, talk us out of James Harden coming to my team. Like, what the hell was that? I'm still shook.
Oh, no, no. There's part of me that's like, if I can get him for nothing, like,
no, I'm saying if he paid me, I wouldn't want him on the team. Like,
Patrick's right. Hey, guys, here you go. I don't quit. I don't quit people very easily. And maybe I'm hanging on to James Harden from 4 or 5 years ago. But like, I still think there's a little bit in there, and they just need a guy who can do what he does. He facilitates, he scores when he's at his best and he's in shape. Now, the only issue is that is in the same city he'd be playing in, and that can be detrimental to the team and himself.
Scores is a strip club talking.
Yes.
Yes.
My issue with James Harden is the same issue I have with Russell Westbrook. Incredible talents, but they don't make your team better. And as a matter of fact, they could fracture whatever existence of a team or cohesion you have to begin with. That's where the real issue is. When you have guys that are selfish, me-first players, it just kills you. And I think, Patrick, when you look at it, think about this. You got Tobias Harris. You mentioned Tyrese Maxey. What a great game he had. I love that kid. He is so good. And then, of course, you got Joel Embiid. James Harden, he comes in there, plays, does the right thing. This team is a legitimate threat with their guys against Milwaukee and Boston.
Also, by the way, how did Kelly Oubre end up on the Sixers? He dropped 27 off the bench last night. How can they afford him? I don't understand NBA salary caps. He's a nice player to have as like your sixth option.
Because he wasn't that nice everywhere else. And you said it's
Oubre,
sixth option.
Oubre is like the Bills. If you really just watch Oubre, you walk away feeling empty. I'm serious. Right. Like, he's talented, but he is an empty calorie player. That's not a player I think is overly effective. Elsewhere, how about LeBron, your boy, getting it done last night? Anthony Davis, he needed a bounce back after that weird second half performance in game one.
You nicknamed him every other Anthony, and he's proving it true already.
That's a great name.
Every other Anthony. That is 100-95. They don't cover the 6.5 last night. How about Durant? Durant went nuts. 39, 11 boards, 2 assists. He had 8 turnovers? See, that's an issue.
Well, they don't.
Who's going to handle the ball?
The issue is they didn't have Booker last night. They already don't have point guard depth. So you're asking guys to do things that's not really what they're normally, you know, doing on the floor. More guys are facilitating than you would really like instead of having one go-to guy. I mean, your starting lineup last night featured Eric Gordon and Grayson Allen in your backcourt. Neither of those guys are handling the ball.
By the way, Patrick, quick update from Sellerhurst Park. Sun scores 2-0.
Thank goodness.
Tottenham.
Thank goodness. Sun's a freaking legend. Imagine if they had Harry Kane. They got new manager there. Dustin, you know, he's from Australia, and they freaking love him. And Tottenham sitting first on the table, Dustin.
Yeah, Harry Kane, close relative of Candy.
The fact that you had Harry and didn't work with that is just, that's a win for everybody.
Well, sometimes my really beard gets on the candy cane and it becomes a Harry cane.
Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Dude, take it easy. You're going to drown yourself, Dustin. My gosh, that was quite a pull from that water bottle. Anywho, betting splits are available over at vsin.com. Money and bets for every game. Updated every 5 minutes straight from DraftKings. Today's games and future events as well. Make sure you include the betting splits in your arsenal. vsin.com. You know, it's interesting. As we welcome you back, we're going to get to some college football. Samich coming up. Dustin doing more water shtick there. Samich coming up in about 29 minutes here on Sharp Money. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw at the D. I'm Patrick Maher live from Los Angeles. Couple things. One, college football. We've got that. Amal's got a bunch of plays. We'll get to those. Wanted to, you know, we were looking at a thirst trap as the show started. We were passing around a little thirst trap. And don't worry, Dustin. I'm not going to say it. And Amal mentioned it looked like somebody was wearing some goggles in the thirst trap. And little did you know, like, you know what you wear when you go to the shooting range, boys? Little did you know, my first real job was the dude that used to pull the clay pigeons for the dude shooting guns.
Stop.
So you go, ready, pull. And I was the guy hiding behind with the earmuffs on that used to pull the clay pigeons.
Is
How
there
about that?
Is there a way you're specifically aiming, or are you just throwing it in the air and it's up to them to find it?
No, I loaded up the machine and I pulled the machine lever, and then they would fire the clay pigeons in the air and the donks would shoot them out of the air.
That's a wild job. That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
It was sweet. It was awesome. You thought I was actually back behind like a board, like just throwing clay pigeons into donks could shoot them?
No, but like, my point is they're supposed to find it in the air, and as it moves, shoot it down. Are you changing the direction or which angle it's coming out of the shoot?
Yeah, because I moved the machine, and then machine kind of changes the direction for the donks.
It's fun. Yeah. It's like you're messing with people the whole time. It sounds like a great time.
Just reminded me, we were looking at a thirst trap, and Maul said it looked like he had shooting goggles on, and I happened to pull it. Ready, pull, bam. Never even shot a gun, but I was out there just crushing clay pigeons. Nice. Nice just got on the board. So nice. They spell it N-I-C-E against Claremont. We needed that, boys. And we've got two from Tottenham. Needed that one. So let's keep it going on the soccer pitch.
Real quick, before we go to football, are you a La Liga guy?
Yes, okay. I am. If they play soccer in a league, La Liga, Argentina, Colombia, MLS, Liga MX, anything that has to do with the soccer
I'm
ball.
I'm a fan of La Liga, but only going to the cities that those teams are in and downloading Tinder in those cities, because that sounds like a good time.
That if you were to go, how can I ask this?
Yeah, I know what you're getting at.
How can I ask this tactfully on a Friday? We're United Nations of VEASAN, right?
Yeah, we've absolutely.
Got a handsome Indian man. I'm a white guy, and Dustin's whatever the hell he is. If you could pick a country based on, well, as Dustin said, who you'd be looking at via Tinder, what country would you go to?
We're going with two answers. Number one is Colombia. Number two is Venezuela. Bye-bye. Have a nice day.
Yeah. The answer is South America, for sure. Yeah. Right?
I'm not going to go with a country. I'm going to go with a state in America. I'm going to go with New Jersey.
Said nobody ever.
What? I love Jersey girls.
Wait. What? What?
I love a girl from New Jersey. Oh, I love... Oh,
that is the worst answer that's ever been given.
No, there's like, I love like Italian American girls, Jewish American girls with darker skin, dark hair, and they're just mean to me. Just treat me like absolute garbage, say awful things about me, basically be Leah Remini's character in King of Queens. I will marry you tomorrow if you're from Jersey and you act like that.
Are you going to pull her out of Scientology too?
Is that not a stunning answer? We gave the correct answers, like Colombia, you know, you could even get Brazil. And then he says New Jersey.
Give me
a
Jersey
Brazil might be the answer, boys. Now that I think about it,
I can go there with you. I don't have a problem signing off on that, but I'm going to tell you right now, I think Colombia, and there's nobody in the rearview mirror.
I can tell you that my new trainer, he moved here from Brazil. And all he does is tell me is about how the women in America are horrible and the women in Brazil are amazing.
What did you say to him? Go to Jersey?
No, he hasn't been there yet. I'm telling you, there's nothing better than a Jersey girl. Just treat me like absolute garbage.
I might put Montana over Jersey if I were just doing rankings. I mean, I'm not even kidding. It's like, that's the weirdest answer given.
But I thought he was going to say where he's lived before. California would have been an answer and you wouldn't have gotten much objection. You could have said Florida. You wouldn't have gotten much objection. Jersey. I mean, it's like...
This is a despicable
answer. It's the equivalent of the great Joakim Noah line. Hey, I heard you're going on vacation. Where are you going? I'm going to Cleveland. Said nobody ever.
My murderer's row are the girls on Jersey Shore.
I don't
you're
even want
to
weird,
say. You listen, to each their own. Good God bless. Okay, Georgia, Florida. Let's do this, boys. 14 is the number. I know you each have a play. Let's get it. Cocktail party, 49 on the total. Amal Shaw.
Couple reasons I'm going Florida here. Just taking the points, rivalry game, but Florida has been non-competitive really for five out of the last 6 years in which Georgia's dominated against against these Gators. But we talked about it earlier with Chris Doering. You asked a great question, Patrick. You said, how much of an impact will it be for this Georgia team without Bowers? And I think it's going to be pretty profound. I don't think they're going to probably drop this football game, but Kendall Milton is banged up. I don't like the running game with this Dogs team. Not as good as the last 2 years in terms of what we've seen. Now, Carson Beck is starting to come on. I think that could be the one area where you look at a difference. The receiving core is still very dangerous for this Dogs team. The defense isn't quite as good as it's been in years past. And I am overreacting to the performance we saw to the Gators in Columbia against South Carolina, but I still think they deserve some credit. You're getting two touchdowns here. This is not necessarily a play on the Gators winning, but more about within the number, and I think they keep that. I think this is probably a Georgia 7-10-point win.
Big guy, what do you got?
I am going to go with a play on a total in the first half. I think that it's set a little bit too high because I think they're both second half, or I think Georgia is more of a second half team, and I don't expect Florida to do much offensively, despite Graham Mertz statistically actually having not that bad of a season. He's looked pretty good, but he's not special. He's not going to make plays against a defense like this. Georgia, I think, will struggle on third downs. That's when they look for Brock Bowers. So that third down conversion rate they've been working with all season long, I think it's going to go down this week, simply because when they're in trouble, he's their go-to guy, and they don't have another person to fill those shoes. McConkey's a nice asset, but he's not Brock Bowers. Bowers is a different type of animal. The defense for Georgia is going to smother this Florida offense. Sixth in total defense, 10th versus the run, 9th versus the pass. They're number one on third down defensively. Florida is 108th offensively on third down. They're just really bad there. I expect the Florida offense to really struggle in the first half. That's why I'm going to go under 24.5 in the first half. If you go back through the last 11 meetings, the average halftime score is at 25. But here's the deal. There's an aberration. In 2020, the score was 59 total points in the first half. Every other year, we're hovering around the 20s. Also, 2020 was Kyle Trask scoring points for Florida. I don't expect that to be this Gator offense doing something else. You take that away, that one year, the average is 21.6. We'll go under in the first half.
You got it. I'm just going to keep, I'm rolling through the board here because Amal's got a bunch of plays, so I'm just going to keep going. Let's do this. Ohio State. You're going to lay a price at Wisconsin, 14.5 here, Amal.
Yeah, I just think the Wisconsin offense is not good enough to be able to put up points against this Buckeyes defense. Ohio State in the top five in college football and scoring defense. That'll be the difference in this game. They get a healthy Trevion Henderson back. I think they'll be able to name their score. Not necessarily name a score, but Wisconsin's still pretty good defensively. But I have concerns when I look at this Badgers team from an offensive standpoint, Patrick. I thought this was going to be a challenging game for the Buckeyes coming into the season. At this point in time, moving forward, I think Ohio State can negate the running game. When you look at this team that right now with the inconsistency at quarterback Braden Locke playing, I just don't believe in Wisconsin. I like the Buckeyes laying 14.5 here. Big number on the road at Camp Randall, but Bucky Badger's not the same.
Also remember
Wisconsin,
no Chesma Lucy.
Woof.
Yeah.
What's that?
No Chesma Lucy either. It's just Braylon Allen. This is not the team we all were high on in the preseason.
No.
Totally different look. And by the way, the Phil Longo offense really hasn't caught on yet.
It's just... For expectations, I'm trying to think, even sitting at 5-2, it's just aesthetically and just the way it's played out with expectations coming into a season. Can we think of somebody like Wisconsin? Woof. Overall, just hit with a thud this year.
Only other team I would go close, and I still agree with you, Wisconsin supersedes them, would be Clemson, who's got three losses.
Clemson's a good one. Clemson's a good one. You were shaking your head yes when I was talking about Clemson as well, big guy.
Yeah. The thing about Wisconsin was there were some new parts and new pieces, new head coach. So there was some change going on there. I compare it, though, to Louisville. Louisville has had a few big wins here to start the year, whereas Wisconsin, they just don't look right. They look clunky.
Could we all agree on a pronunciation of Louisville? Because you just did two in the same sentence. You did Louisville, and then you said Louisville.
It's
so
Louisville.
Which one is it?
Louisville.
It's Louisville. No, it's not Louisville.
It's Louisville.
It's a Louisville slugger.
It's Louisville.
No.
All right. Fair enough. BYU, Texas. What else? Oklahoma, Kansas. Got to get to that next as well.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings, new customers, promo code SHARP. Bet $5, get $200 instantly in bonus bets. It's a great deal for new customers over at DraftKings. Just download the app, and every day for all bettors. No sweat, same game parlay. Make sure you check it out at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Sharp Money, we welcome you back here. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, Amal Shah, Dustin Sweetelson. Hour three coming up with our buddy Mike Samich. Samich sent over a bunch of plays, of course, VSiN host. And then we're going to run the board as is customary on a Friday, the NFL board. Right now, we're talking a little college football. The boys are on some of the same games, so I'm going to set them up here. Let's go here. We've got a top 25 matchup, 8 Oregon at... And Utah is great at home. 6-1 Utah, 13, of course, ranked. Let's see. So right now, I'm just going to check and quickly see where we opened. We did touch 7 a few days back, but Oregon sitting 6.5. But again, touch 7, a little buyback off the 7. No surprise there, the key number on Utah. So Oregon, 6.5-point favorite at Utah. Amal Shah, 47 on the total.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough game for Oregon to cover, to realistically to win this game. But I think the Heisman Trophy winner, Bo Nix and company, go on the road and figure out a way to get it done at a tough place. 3,300 feet elevation at Rice-Eccles, one of the most underrated and underappreciated home field advantages in college football, Patrick. I think the injury bug has kind of impacted this Utah team, but Bryson Barnes was outstanding in Los Angeles last week. Last year, this was a competitive game. Oregon wins 20 to 17. I just think the combination of getting Bucky Irving, who didn't play much in the second half against Washington State due to an undisclosed injury, back in the mix, along with what Bo Nix and this offense are capable of, will be the difference in this game. There's no way. Here's the thing, a reason why this number doesn't make sense to me, guys. Remember when they went to Texas Tech earlier in the year? They were laying 8, 7.5, 8. You're trying to tell me that Oregon going on the road to Utah is virtually the same thing as going to Lubbock? I don't think so. I like Utah here getting 6.5, but I think the Ducks pull out the win.
Big guy.
So I think a few things are skewed when we look at Oregon. I do think they want to run the ball more than people think. They run the ball 35.5 times per game. And when you look at how that opens things up for Bo Nix in the passing game, I think it's going to be a challenge because Utah's 5th at defending the run. This is by far the best defense that this Oregon offense has faced all season long. Utah's 14th in total defense. They faced Texas Tech. They faced Hawaii. Those are 59 and 83rd. Washington, 84th. Oregon, Colorado, 130. Stanford, 126. Wazoo, 116. Oregon has not faced very many tough defenses. This is a different animal. And I think Utah is a little bit more battle-tested when it comes to what their defense has seen. Remember, they limited Florida to 11. They limited UCLA to 7. And Oregon State, who's turned out to be a really good offensive team, to 21. Normally, I'm not big on like backing a team coming off a big win the way Utah is coming off the USC win, but it's different for two reasons. Kyle Whittingham and Rice-Eccles Stadium. Kyle Whittingham in Salt Lake City is 62-45-4 ATS. Their last home loss was 2020 to USC, before that 2019 to Oregon and Justin Herbert. It's been a long time. It's a different animal. A lot of college football empires try to go into Rice-Eccles and plant their flag and end up running home in shambles.
By the way, you just mentioned USC and it made me think of it. Fellas, the vibes are horrific here in Los Angeles on this program right now. Horrific. The honeymoon is over.
Well, you've got a generational player. You know what I just happened to see the other day? I went back and watched the highlight of the Oklahoma-Texas game with Caleb Williams. Remember, they were down about 17 points. He rallies them. They win the game. Now the guy wins the Heisman last year. They had a lead against Utah in Rice-Eccles. Utah scores, and I love the call by Kyle Whittingham to go for the 2 and win the football game. They do just that. And you mentioned it, Patrick. They have a bad loss against Notre Dame. It's one thing to lose a tight game the way Notre Dame lost to Ohio State, but it's another thing to absolutely get wrecked the way they did in South Bend. Then you turn around and you're really, I don't know how much of the SC game you guys saw, but they were getting dominated by the Utes. I know they get the late score and they get the pick six, they take the lead, but the reality was Utah was in control of that football game all the way through.
It's weird vibes around the program. And I was here when your boy, why is his name slipping my mind?
Clay Helton?
Sarkisian. When Sarkisian was here, and obviously they handed it over, the adult in the room, Clay Helton, and Helton, obviously, that was a job a little too big for him. But when Sarkisian was here, and literally, I mean, I'm not disparaging anybody, but he had substance abuse issues. He was giving pressers that were odd, obviously on something, and was unceremoniously let go. I know it sounds crazy, but it almost feels the same way right now.
Oh, I have
I don't know how to explain it, because people care about USC. Amal knows this. And Dustin, you lived here too. People care about USC football in Los Angeles. They do. It matters.
Well, if you think it's spiraling now with Lincoln Riley missing practices with the pneumonia coming off the loss and not being at his coach's show, and hopefully he, you know, gets better if he really is sick. But this is a weird spot right now. They're 10-point favorites on the road at Cal. But here's how the season ends. They've still got Washington, they go to Eugene, and they close up with UCLA. If you think the vibes are bad now, if they lose three of those games, and by the way, they very well could, it's going to be really ugly for Lincoln Riley.
Patrick hit the nail on the head. I was looking at Lincoln Riley's record in Norman, 55-10. Never lost more than two games in a season, right? Consistent, 9-2, 12-2, whatever it was, never had more than two losses. Last year he comes to L.A., loses three games, and if you guys remember the Cotton Bowl against Tulane, thought it was bad coaching. Mario Williams fumbles the ball at the one-yard line to get the safety, and then all of a sudden we see Tulane get the late score and beat him. And Dustin's right, Patrick. You're looking at a Trojans team that could wind up with four, potentially five losses. Now, with all that being said, I got to tell you, I think the Trojans flat out cook Cal this weekend.
Yeah, you're laying the 10, right?
I love it. This is a game where I don't think Cal's got enough athletes to be able to stay with the USC offense. Marshawn Lloyd, Dorian Singer, Zachariah Branch, these guys all have big days. Caleb throws for north of 300 yards. I think USC takes care of business comfortably against California.
I think it's a good play. I'm not betting it, but I can envision the world that Amal is living in right now with this bet. And it's where USC's offense sends a message, gets downhill, starts slinging it around, and Cal just can't hang in that kind of game. They might for a little bit, but at some point USC pulls away and they'll cover the number.
BYU Texas, Ewers out, 20's the number, 50 the total. Texas laying the number, hosting BYU, Amal.
Yeah, I think the Texas offense is going to struggle a little bit. We see what Sanders and Worthy are capable of doing when they've got Quinn Ewers under center. Malik Murphy's a nice talent, but he's a redshirt freshman. Quinn Ewers got 3 years in college football already. That's going to be the difference. Patrick, I think the number's a little bit high if you like the Cougars here. Kalani Sitake's team, older, a little bit more experienced. Keaton Slovis with a ton of experience at quarterback. Remember, talking about the Trojans, a former USC transfer himself. But for me, Patrick, when you talked about this in the beginning of the season and nothing has changed, this Texas defense is an elite defense. It's a very, very good defense, and I think that'll be the difference. I don't see Texas getting to 30 in this game, and I sure don't see BYU being able to put up more than 24 points, and that would be an optimistic number. This game, to me, feels like a Texas 24-17 type of game. I think it's going to be lower scoring. I think if you're going to bet this game, I would go with a potential parlay of BYU and the under.
Did not see Crystal Palace getting on the board in extras, big guy, but they did. 2-1. Let's go ahead and call that game so Amal and I can get the hell out of here. BYU, Texas. What do you got, Dust?
Must be a fragile team, Crystal Palace. I mean, just one thing and the whole thing can come crumbling down.
It's not bad. It's not terrible. Go ahead.
I love the points in BYU. I loved it when it opened at 17. It's been bet all the way up. I have one book here in Vegas, 20 and a hook. I will absolutely take that. BYU and Texas have played five times. BYU is 4-1 lifetime against the Longhorns. They're 2-1 in Austin. If I remember correctly, the last time was Taysom Hill running wild all over this Texas squad. Backup quarterback Malik Murphy's thrown 8 passes. That's way too many points to be favored by if you're a 20-star quarterback. I don't care how talented he is. I don't care how good he is. Quinn Ewers is an NFL prospect at quarterback. You can't just still get 20 points when he leaves the game. So when I look at the other side, I see the vet in Keaton Slovis. I see a bunch of usually grown old men on the Cougars roster. That's why they're the Cougars. And Slovis had a great year. 12 touchdowns, 4 picks. Just be serviceable against Texas. We're going to cover that number. We'll walk out with an easy win.
Guys,
I just don't get it. I don't get the. This is one that I just don't understand it being bought up. I thought it was going to get bought down with Ewers ruled out.
real quickly, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Texas, and Kansas State all have a singular loss in the Big 12. Next week in Austin, Texas plays Kansas State. I believe that's going to be the team that represents to play Oklahoma. This is a game, if you're Texas, you get through, you rely on Brooks running the football and your defense, and you figure out a way through, and you get ready for Lance Leopold and company.
Can we blow the whistle? I mean, that's enough extras, isn't it?
We got another still minute and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Crystal Palace, fragile. Look at you, big guy, stepping up your soccer game. It's not terrible. Coming up, hour three, last hour of the week. What's that mean? Samich is on the way.